the one dressing all gold and black. You better retreat, cause we're on the attack. The strength of the wolf is the strength of the pack. We're Wolverhampton, we're on our way back.
Well, hello everybody, welcome to episode 330. That is 330. It's the ENS Wolves! Ah! Podcast! I'm your host, Nathan Judah. At the other end of the microphone, I hope, is Wolverhampton Wanderers reporter, as ever, Mr. Liam Keane. Keano, are you in there, lad?
I am. I'm coming to you live and direct for the first time from my new home.
Oh! Wi-Fi is up and running at Shea Keane.
It certainly is. I mean, I'll be honest with you, and this is one of the probably one of the most boring ways to start a podcast. So I apologise in advance, but I'm going to do it anyway. I've had a little bit of issue with the Wi-Fi on my phone, but not any other device.
Interesting.
And that's really confusing me. So I'm using this platform basically as an opportunity to speak to the masses. If anyone has got any idea how to fix it, let me know. And if you know how to put a shelf up, I'll give you my address.
Oh, sorry, you finished up, yeah. What's your speed? You want to go through your speed, your upload, your download speed, and all that kind of shebang?
Speeds are really good. For some reason, my iPhone and my iPad is occasionally struggle. It's like throughout the day, it drops in and out. But every other device, the laptop which I'm on right now, no issues. But that's the boring stuff. Otherwise, house is great. We're buzzing. And it's the first potty from the home, so let's make it a good one.
Oh, love to hear it. How's it been then? How have you been for the last three or four days? You missed me?
I have. As usual, you were off on your travels. how did you get on?
Very good, yes. Took the advantage of working, as you do as well sometimes, Mr. Liam King, working Saturday, Sunday, this weekend coming up. So I thought, right, well, we'll take Monday and Tuesday off for the weekend. I might take a holiday day yesterday. And got back from Newcastle around 11 o'clock on Saturday night, 6 a.m., flight to Toulouse Airport on Sunday. And we took a little transfer just into Spain, to the Pyrenees, and went to Baquera and went skiing for 3 days, which was very nice. We had a load of snow the night before. It was the dream. Snow coming up the mountain, 30, 40 centimetres, 3 days skiing. I'm absolutely shattered. Got back in the house 45 minutes ago.
Was it actually that long? 45
minutes ago, I flew in, got into, you didn't even realise it, did you? No. Flew into Heathrow this afternoon at 1 o'clock, had a young gentleman pick me up in a car, take me through to here because I've got to do a podcast, and I'm now back sat in my study talking to your beautiful self.
I'll tell you what, part of the reason I didn't realise that you were back so soon, I'm glad you had a good time by the way, that... To your credit, you're very good at replying even when you are away. So I messaged you, what was it? Was it Monday?
Monday.
It was couple of ideas about some Wolves content we were looking at. Completely forgot, even though you told me that you were going away, completely forgot you were there. And you replied instantly and we had a whole conversation. And then you were like, yeah, just on a coffee break, I'm going to head back up the slopes. And I was like, oh, right. Sorry.
I find it. We've had talks in the past, not just us as a company, but you know, I've been to a lot of other conferences. I did some speaking to a lot of journalists last year, and a couple of different meetings. And there was one in Birmingham. It was a lot of basically journalists and producers and directors and editors throughout the country. And they asked me to go and talk to them about, you know, changing things up. And I'd like to think we do things a little bit differently, me and you, Liam. And, you know, we obviously have our content comes first, but we have a little bit of fun. We have a bit of, you know, there's some pictures. It could be a bit of animation. We'll maybe report things differently. The podcast people listen to are probably slightly different from their normal podcasts, etc. So it was an alternative way to try and get people and users involved and making audience the most important people, which obviously they are. The fans are the most important thing. They always come first. Anyway, long story short, the person before me is talking and they're going on and on, and I am literally going to sleep. And what they're talking about is, oh, social media, it's really important. But also, when you leave the office at 5 o'clock, the office, you need to turn your phone off. You need to decompress. You need to be there. You need to put your phone in your desk and leave it in your desk and not come back to it till 9 o'clock the next day. And everybody's like, yeah. I completely agree. You've got to switch off. And I'm like, I get onto the platform. I'm going, I don't know what they're talking about. If you're going to be successful, if you're going to be good, if you're going to be in sport, and you've got to be on there 24/7, I don't care whether you're on holiday, whether you're abroad, Kina, whether it's 11 o'clock at night or 6 in the morning, if something happens or we've got to talk about it, we talk about it, and you can't switch off. That's what makes, you know, when you love your job, you've got to do it. And everybody was like, oh, yeah, actually. And the person looked at me and was like absolutely staring daggers down at me. And I'm like, I don't care, mate. I don't care. You've got to do it. And we love to do it. I get people don't get it. And they want to kind of like, you know, 6 o'clock or whenever the shift finishes, and then we'll pick it up the next morning. But that's sport. That's why we live sport, because something can happen first thing in the morning. It could happen at 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock at night. That's why we are here. It could happen on the slopes.
Yeah, make a very good point, my friend. You've always got to have a little bit of balance as well, because sometimes you can't be on Twitter looking at some of the things that people say about us. Because let's be honest, we wouldn't be off Twitter if we gave a lot of airtime.
But we've got thick skin, so we take it all with a pinch of salt. You know, and I get, look, it's not one size fits all. I'll tell you what. Two and a half months of eating, one size does not fit all. I need to get back in the gym. But no, I get it. And you know, sometimes things can get a little bit strange. You do need to decompress. I get it. You need to relax a little bit. But at the same time, when you'd sign up to be a sports journalist, you know, that's why we love it. We're not at a desk. We're not sat at a desk in an office 9 to 5. You know, our work is basically, and I will always, you know, appreciate this, other people's enjoyment. That's their release. You know, people work bloody hard 9 to 5 on a Monday to Friday so they can enjoy their football on a Saturday, and that's their release. And I would, because we're getting paid to do it, but I want their enjoyment and their levels of enjoyment and their experience to be as good as enjoyable as possible, regardless of the result. And that's what we're there to do. And if we have to go a little bit longer before or afterwards, then so be it, my friend.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I've lost count of the amount of times I've turned the laptop on at, I don't know, a Saturday randomly when there's not a game, or there's a Sunday, or there's not a game, whatever it is, or I've come back from jiu-jitsu and raced home at 9 p.m. to fire the laptop and do something. I'm not complaining though. That's the life. I love it. You know, no complaints from me. You know, you got the privilege of following your club and covering your club and going home and away to all the games. No complaints here. I tell you what, it's been a rather serious start to this podcast.
I know,
it's a lovely message to get out there.
It's I've got nothing. That's a little bit solemn as well to finish off before we start getting into it.
Oh, God, here we go.
I've got an apology to make.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I've got an apology to make. I've got an apology to make to Wolverhampton Wanderers Football Club. Wow. I've been doing this job for a long time, and I pride myself on my conduct, the content, and the relationship with the club. I overstepped the line, and I fell short of what was expected from myself and levels of professionalism, because last season, Liam, on this podcast, I ranked Newcastle United above Wolves in media facilities. And I want to go on record to say that was one of the worst calls I have ever made in my entire life. Wolverhampton Wanderers media facility is night and day ahead of Newcastle United. Mate, that was a SHIT show at times on Saturday. Have you ever seen anything as amateur as that at Premier League level?
Amateur. I mean, you know that I don't tend to hold back on this podcast when it comes to discussing media facilities. Everton, Crystal Palace, there's a couple others. You know, I've really given it to them. And I can't hold back on this either. I mean, you can tell when I'm annoyed. You know me well enough now.
Oh, I do.
You can tell when I'm annoyed. And at half time in that game, I just could not stop saying to both you and there was some of the colleagues we were speaking to, some of the Wolves staff we were speaking to, I could not kept saying this sentence: how on earth does a Premier League ground have facilities like this? How on earth? I could go to Walsall tomorrow and report on their game and not be soaked sat in my seat. I mean, it was actually mental. You saw my coat as well, because the wind and the rain is coming at me, and I'm leaning over. We're both leaning over to protect our laptops. The front half of my coat was the normal colour. The back half was a totally different shade.
Completely different colour.
Absolutely soaked.
For those who don't know, so the press facility, or the press box, is basically right just behind the dugout, which is, you know, it's a great view and it's an enjoyable view. And we have that at a lot of Premier League grounds and are very fortunate to do that. But the way that it's been designed and the way where previous, you know, owner Mike Ashley's put the media there, they basically have this kind of small perspex curved L, and it only kind of covers half the desk, but it does nothing to shield nothing. If it rains and it's coming in this direction, you have got absolutely no chance. I looked at the whole press box thing and it was bucketing down. I tweeted a video, I haven't seen it, you know, scroll back and watch it. It shouldn't be too far in my timeline, but our laptops were literally getting soaked. We were hunched over. It was freezing. We were mopping up. There was no tissues available. It was an absolute disgrace. Not to mention the fact that we get there and, okay, the parking's okay, and it's about a 10, 15-minute walk. We get in there. It's been, you know, how long was your drive, Liam?
Oh, it was probably just over four.
Just over 4 hours. We get there starving, can't wait for a bit of food. One of the worst Premier League food I have had this season. It's absolutely disgusting. It was like this chicken curry. I got about 2 cubes of chicken. It was manky, dry rice. Then there was a veggie option, which I tried to get extra bit of like curry, like vegetable curry. That was terrible. I had like 2 mouthfuls. We had these mini naans that were stale as anything. And then, oh, there's a tomato soup option, right? Keena, let's go and get tomato soup. So we basically, like Oliver Twist, poured this tomato soup and had a bread roll thinking, thank God, praise the Lord, I'm absolutely starving. At least that'll do us until full time. It was 90% water, 10% tomato concentrate. I could not drink anything. It was from start to finish, that was, and including the game, I guess, awful. I have never, ever, ever in my entire life gone in early on purpose, apart from going to interview fans. Liam, I think we can both say this. After 65, 70 minutes of literally the most torrential rain, where our equipment was going to start getting destroyed, we had to go inside and finish the game. It was that bad.
I don't think it was even that long. I think it was...
It might have been. No, but I mean, 55, was it? It was early on.
Easily within 10 minutes of the second half start. Yeah. So probably, yeah. I don't know, 7, 8 minutes, something like that. And we had to go inside. We had no other choice. But when we went out at half time, we did say, if there's another downpour, we're going to have to come in.
We were gone, yeah.
We just can't. You can't stay out there. And we weren't the only one as well. There was other media that all came inside as well. But I don't think I've ever come inside early for a game. And I had to. Had no choice. It was absolutely terrible. That drive home was fun as well. Getting back about 11-ish as well, similar time to you. Yeah.
Our only enjoyment of literally that day was you pulling alongside me on probably the A1 and beeping me, and then we played a bit of fun and games of hazard warning lights and full beams for about 5 minutes before we stopped at Weatherby Services together.
Yeah, that was easily the most enjoyable part of the day, particularly when you look at the football as well. It was definitely the best.
Well, that takes us on to the football. Sorry about that, but that was my apologies to Wolverhampton Wanderers. It wasn't great, was it, Liam? Look, 3-0 defeat, but actually, we're not going to go over too much of the game. I thought that they actually competed pretty well at the start of the game, and then, you know, a bit of unfortunate circumstances for the first goal. You know, Isak can't really miss from there, but then, you know, a couple of disappointing goals, and obviously, really, the main talking point actually weren't about the game full time. It was about the halftime substitutions, and then, of course, the news about Hwang Lim.
Yeah, I mean, you come out the back of that game, and obviously, me and Steve Maley, the Athletic, start asking Gary questions, and as always, he's very sort of accommodating, giving good and full answers, and talking a lot about the football and how he felt Wolves had controlled large parts of the game, and obviously mistakes and probably avoidable goals allowed Newcastle to have what was in the end an unassailable lead. And then it gets to, you know, asking a few bits about a couple of the injuries and just double checking on Saar and you know, just seeing where players are at. And Gary sort of drops a line in there to say that Hwang definitely won't be available for Fulham, just in the middle of an answer, and sort of obviously sparked me to ask for an update on Hwang. And I don't think any of us were expecting
No.
to hear him say that he'd be out for around about 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. That leaves Wolves in, I think Gary described it as a disaster, didn't he, at the time? And
he did.
Completely
he said,
agree.
He said,
I mean,
absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, especially when you, I think Gary himself, and this is...
I can give you his words, actually. His words, word for word, were, bear with me, it's obviously a disaster.
There you go. Yeah, and he's spot on. And this isn't a criticism of Gary, actually. It's just a bit of an observation. I think something that probably he's observed as well from what I could glean from his answers and the way he was answering. And also, he sort of alluded to this point, is that he's given, after press conferences, he often doesn't have a full debrief with the medical team. He will have, you know, the occasional word with them before coming in to see us. But there's been a couple times, and particularly Hwang after the Brighton game, where he said, mm-hmm. I don't expect it to be a particularly bad injury. Hopefully, you know, a week, 10 days, something like that. It turns out to be a lot worse than that. And I think Gary, by no means do I think he's done that deliberately at all, because he may have known more before the Newcastle game, because he didn't give us, you know, a particularly good update in that press conference before that game. But I don't think at that point after the Brighton game he was aware. And then in his answers he starts to talk about, you know, I've not spoken to the medical team yet, so I need to see when it comes to Neto and Saar. And I think he was a little bit concerned about giving an answer that was then going to result in you know, a different conclusion you know, a few days later. So obviously Saar and Neto will hopefully find out a little bit more going into Friday's press conference ahead of the game against Fulham, but it seemed like they were okay at the time.
Yeah.
But to lose Hwang is, yeah, I mean, it's considering you've got Mateus Cunha out is a massive blow. And I remember speaking to Dave Edwards for one of our columns a few weeks back, and he said when Wolves have lost one of Cunha, Hwang, Neto, they've managed to still thrive mm-hmm. rather than just survive. With one of them missing. Obviously, you want all three, but if you have one of them, they've been able to get through it. Losing two of those three is where Wolves will really be tested, and they've now got that situation. And, I mean, God forbid Neto goes down at any point, Wolves are going to be in a really sticky situation.
Yeah, what's for certain, and just to finish off there, Gary Neil did say that he probably expected, and he offered this for free, he probably expected Mateus Cunha to be back before Hwang Hee-chan for you know, which is interesting. Obviously, we've talked a bit about Cunha, whether he's available maybe after the international break, how soon after the international break remains to be seen. But, you know, you're hoping for Aston Villa, Burnley, West Ham in and around that time. But what is for certain, Liam, is that Wolves have at least two games without Hwang Hee-chan and Mateus Cunha in Fulham. And, of course, that massive game. Against Coventry City. Before we go on to that and a couple of things I want to say about both of these next two games coming up, I'm putting you on the spot here like I normally do because we haven't had a lot of notes. We've been back and forth a little bit. But if you had to single out one player who would benefit in the short term from the Hwang Hee-chan injury, who do you think that would be?
Now, there's a caveat to my answer here. It's if he starts to turn up, but it has to be Jean-Brick Nabellegarde, because he is going to get the minutes now, and he had those minutes when Hwang was away at the Asia Cup. He was playing a makeshift number nine role. Mm-hmm. A couple games where he did okay, a couple games where he clearly struggled. Overall, not particularly impressive as a number nine, but you have to give him the benefit of the doubt that he isn't a number nine. He's nowhere near a number nine as his style and size and stature as a footballer, and he's being thrown in there to do a job for the team, really. And Gary had few other options aside from throwing in a 19-year-old in Nathan Fraser. So the difference here is that Bellegarde now needs to start performing, but at the same time, he's also got that get-out-of-jail-free card where he may have to play as a number nine still. But Wolves now, because of the injuries, they have to get something out of him. Mm-hmm. And they tried to play a bit more fluid at Newcastle, Neto, Sarabia, Bellegarde sort of interchanging a little bit. But Bellegarde was much better in the second half when Fraser came on and he was on the left. So you have to start playing these players in the natural position. But Bellegarde, unfortunately, is in that position where he probably isn't going to get that luxury. But you have to see more from him. He's going to have these minutes now to make an impact. And that's the opportunity to step up, really, and show Wolves why you invested the money on him. We've seen glimpses of it here and there. And it's good news for him in the sense he'll get minutes, not good news in the sense that he probably won't play his best position. But either way, regardless of that, we have to start seeing more from him.
Yeah, you've put that very well, Liam. I agree. I do feel sorry for him at times a little bit because, like you say, he's playing out of position. He's not a number nine. You know, we've seen some really good Bellegarde performances, but that's not his position. But he's doing it for the good of the team. You know, a bit like, I guess, Mateus Cunha was playing as a nine, but he wasn't a number nine, but he was doing it for the good of the team. That's what, you know, Lopetegui wanted to do with him. It's but yeah, he does need to show a little bit more. I've got another person who may, and this is a little bit more off the wall, and you've got to think maybe a couple of moves ahead, and this might not happen, who might benefit potentially if Gary Neal doesn't feel like he wants to go with that front three of Bellegarde, Pedro Neto and Pablo Sarabia. And you can shoot me down if you think this is absolute rubbish, but which is probably the case. Hugo Bueno. I just wonder whether we might see Ryan Aitnori move a little bit further upfield, and maybe that might allow a Bellegarde or a Sarabia, probably a Bellegarde, to still stay on that bench and maybe play. You know, Pedro Neto obviously can play on that right hand side. You know, you've got Sarabia, but maybe Neto, and maybe like a Neto Aitnori Sarabia, you know, Neto and Sarabia kind of interchanging a little bit, and having Hugo Bueno in that left wing back slot and then leaving Bellegarde on the bench, or at least having that as a potential sub move at some point, depending on where they are in the game.
Yeah, I saw a few people on Twitter sort of suggesting this, and I don't mind it, actually. I think it's a decent option because for two reasons. One, you allow Aitnori to hopefully flourish going forward. Mm-hmm. I think he's very good in that respect. He's been very good actually defensively overall this season. But we know his talents are marauding forward down that left side. It gives Hugo Bueno an opportunity to come in and impress, a player who did really well in his breakthrough season last year. He's had a really frustrating campaign so far with injuries and the fact that Ryan's been doing so well he can't get back into the side. So it gives both of them an opportunity in different ways. But then equally it gives Gary O'Neill different options from the bench, because otherwise, without having Bellegarde on that bench, your only attacking options are Noah Lamina, who hasn't played a single minute yet and is 18 years old, Nathan Fraser, who's 19 years old, and Tawanda Chirewa, who is slightly older than those, a couple of years older, but he is only just breaking through, and obviously his minutes have been a lot more limited in comparison to someone like Nathan Fraser. Fraser, for example, in his last two games has come on at half time in the last two games he's played in, which is Brentford, the loss at Molineux, and Newcastle at the weekend. So Gary O'Neill, albeit he's not using him every week, is clearly starting to prime him for a few more minutes here and there. And
has spoken of that, hasn't he? Spoken that Hugo Bueno, I think it was a story that yesterday or today, that he will get more minutes, he will get his chance. I just wonder whether that, like you said, that just gives a few more options to Gary O'Neill. Yes, it's not the ideal formation they wanted to play in back in January when he sent, you know, Fabio and Sasha on loan. Look, I'm pretty sure that if Fabio Silva was still here, let's say Sasha had gone, but Fabio Silva or one of these two was staying here, that they would be playing at this moment in time. It's as simple as that. But we've talked about that. I'm not going to go over all ground. But at the same time, you've got to use what you've got in your squad. And I feel like Gary does definitely think outside the box, and that's, we've been very successful at that this season. And like you say, if you do leave a Bellegarde out and you have him on the bench, that does just add a little bit more when you need to make a change, you know, maybe 60 minutes, 55 minutes into a game.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's also got the opportunity of playing, provided João Gomes is available, of playing those three midfielders again, maybe Lamina playing that hybrid sort of slightly more attacking role, and just playing Neto and Sarabia and then having Bellegarde from the bench. So those options, I think, just gives him a little bit more firepower later in games when the squad is so thin. And just a final point, actually, on Bellegarde. I think it's an important one to make. They brought him in knowing that he was a sort of left-sided midfielder, could also play more centrally. And, I mean, clearly his strengths are similar to Mateus Nunes in many ways, in picking the ball up deep, running beyond players, very good close control, speed within possession. Quite strong as well, considering he's not obviously played in England before and his fairly short stature, but he is a player who is got a bit about him physically. And you've got to remember his debut, wasn't it, was the home game against Liverpool, and he was brilliant in that game. Started, was superb, and you've got to remember this was at a time when Wolves were still playing four at the back. This was a very different Wolves team until Gary O'Neill changed system, and he was sort of forced to change from what he ideally wanted to do to get a bit of success out of this team. And Wolves in that starting 11 for that game played Sarr, Semedo, Dawson, Kilman, Aitnori, no surprises. João Gomes, Lamina midfield, no surprise there. but it was Huang, Bellegarde, Neto, and then Cunha. And Cunha played as the striker at the time before he was moved over to the left side. This formation, this system, was clearly what Gary Neal wanted to implement straight away. Was unable to with the players he had, and he felt he had to change the system. Be interesting to see if it's something he goes back to. But Bellegarde was signed with the idea of him playing in this almost left number 10 position, where he was able to pick the ball up from deep and drive forward and play in these. And it's very much a different position he's playing in at the moment, whether that's nine or on the left of this front three. So you have to give him a little bit of slack in that. The best parts of Bellegarde that we've seen so far has been in a very different system, a very different formation and position, obviously, for him personally. So I would like to think the best is yet to come from him. But in the short term, with Huang and Cunha out, it's time for him to step up.
Good chat. Another thing I wanted to bring up, and I don't like doing this. I think this is the second time I've done this podcast. I don't like doing it. I read one of Liam Keane's newsletters while I was away. Because you know, I'm top of the mountain. I've just done a few blues and reds and the odd black, and I'm having my coffee. Got the old hip flask out. Little nip of Bailey's in there. Just to get the old juices flowing before we get and do another few runs. And I'm going through, and the Wolves newsletter pops up. By the way, if you haven't subscribed, why not? ExpressandStar.com/Wolves, completely free. You get all the stories straight into Wolf Stories, straight into your inbox every single day, absolutely free. And you also get a little comment from myself or Mr. Liam Keane daily, apart from on a match day. So why not do it if you haven't? Go for it. And Liam Keane had an interesting observation. And I think this was on Monday, Liam, your newsletter. And you said, and I'm not going to quote you because I haven't got it in front of me, but basically, summarising it, you said, a lot of people talking about Coventry being a massive game, and it is. However, let's not go crazy here and say the season is still over. Wolves are very much right slap bang in a European race. Can we not just put this behind us? A couple more good results, and we're right in the mix. And you were very, absolutely exactly how I was feeling. So a wry smile came upon me at 5,000 feet, Liam, because you're absolutely right. Look, Wolves have had a fantastic run in the league, a brilliant run in the league. It was going to come to a stop at some point. You know, they've had a couple of bad results, or that disappointing result, obviously, against Manchester United, but they've rebounded. They've done some great job. Sheffield United wasn't a great watch, but they got the job done. You go to Newcastle, you're going to lose some games. They lost the game. They were second best overall. But they are still 2 points away from European football, with Fulham at home on Saturday in 2 days' time, in less than 48 hours' time when we're recording this podcast. Wolves beat Fulham. They're probably eighth again. Eighth or ninth again, maybe a point away from European football. They could be in the European or the Europa Conference places after that win. So I'm pleased you said it. Because, yes, we're going to talk about Coventry and we're going to talk about them. It's going to be a huge podcast next week, of course. But let's look at this Fulham game. And I'm sure Gary and Neil will be looking at this Fulham game, because they've still given themselves a fantastic chance of doing something special, not just at the Cup this season, but through the league.
Yeah, absolutely. I looked at the league table after the loss to Newcastle, and you realise that, yes, Wolves are back down to 10th, but they're 2 points off Newcastle, who are in 8th. They are well in this race still. There's 11 games to go in the Premier League, and they have every opportunity of making it into the top seven, top eight. Now, obviously, on the other side of that, they play Fulham this weekend, and Fulham are 3 points off Wolves. If Wolves lose this game, doesn't mean they're out of the race, but they've invited another team into this European glob, if you will.
They'll love it. So, love it. The European glob, love it.
So, yeah, I think It's dangerous to write Wolves off because they've proven people wrong time and again. And it reminded me of what Gary said in a previous press conference, where they'd beaten Chelsea. Mm-hmm. Everyone says Wolves are going for Europe. They lost to Brentford. Everyone said, Wolves are never going to make Europe.
Correct.
They beat Spurs. Everyone said Wolves are back in for Europe again. It doesn't work like that on one, two, three games. We'll know more about this Wolves side and where they're at in the coming weeks regarding the European race. But right now, they're certainly not out of it. Was it a blow at St James's Park? Of course it was. Did it harm their chances? Absolutely. But there's absolutely no reason why they're still not in this race when you look at the points, how tight it is, and the games they've got coming up. I think that's a really important point. They've got really good fixtures coming up, regardless of the injuries and regardless of the fact that there's no easy Premier League game. you look at how Wolves beat Sheffield United, it was certainly not easy. But they go in against a Fulham, who are beatable. Obviously, the Bournemouth game has been postponed now with or set to be rescheduled with the Coventry game. But you've got Bournemouth coming up at some point. You've got Forest, Burnley, West Ham. You've got so many games that Wolves
winnable
are more than
games,
capable.
Yeah.
Yeah, more than capable of getting results in. So, yeah, I don't think you definitely can't underestimate the importance of the Coventry game because it's absolutely massive. But if we're looking at purely based on Wolves' ability or best chance of getting into Europe, it still remains with the league. Because to get into Europe via the FA Cup, they've got to win it, and beating Coventry is something you would hope Wolves go on to do. But winning it is a long way off, especially with the teams that are left in the competition. Whereas in the league, they've got every opportunity of still doing it. So there's a big 11 games coming up in the Premier League to determine how Wolves get on.
Absolutely. Look, if they beat Fulham, they're slap bang in it. They're still slap bang in it, even if they draw. But the good thing is about this season, Liam, is that Wolves haven't drawn many games. You know, they've won or they've lost, which actually is a big bonus sometimes because you can really go up the league pretty quickly if you do eradicate those draws. And they have, and they've held on or they've come from behind, but they've really given themselves a good go by making, you know, firm results of 3-point wins. So it's a great chance for them. And look, Fulham are flying. They are flying, absolutely. And we'll obviously preview that towards the end of this podcast. But there's no reason why they can't win that game. And by the way, for the record as well, early indicator here, Pedro Neto, Sarabia, Bellegarde, etc., whoever plays in that front three or front two and the team without Huang, without Mateus Cunha, they still have a fantastic chance. And they should be still beating Coventry City, by the way. A week on Saturday, they absolutely should be, and they should be big favourites. I saw the game against West Brom. West Brom beat them last weekend, or was it June?
I think so.
Last weekend. Look, Wolves should still be winning that game, regardless of the players they've got out. Absolutely, 100%. So let's not rule out Fulham yet. Let's go to Fulham first. But I'm still pretty confident that they can get 3 points on Saturday. I think that sets them up fantastically going into what will be that international break. And hopefully they've got some better injury news on the other side. Right, let's move on. So Saturday morning, Liam, and you're just about to get ready to go to Newcastle United. And up steps the company's house, releases the details of some financials, of which Wolverhampton Wanderers were involved, making a loss of £67 million for the 2022-2023 financial year, but are on course to stay within the Premier League's profit and sustainability rules. Lengthy article, lengthy information about it. Some people were like, oh, what's going on? What's happening now? Some people were like, oh, that's great. The really good information and I understand the situation. And other people are like, does that mean we need to sell Pedro Neto? There's so many different angles and people a little bit confused. Some people get it, some people don't. Some people want a little bit more explanation. And obviously, sometimes it's very difficult in just one piece or one article. So I think when we have this podcast, this was probably the main thing in this podcast that I wanted you to kind of explain, because obviously you've got a handle on the financials and as it stands, as you have done throughout this summer pre-season, everything regarding FFP, the good, the bad and the ugly. So the floor is yours, my friend, if you want to just explain the situation, what led to putting that article together and obviously the information as it stands at this moment in time.
Yes, absolutely. I'll start very quickly. Feel free to chime in on this if you need to. But just out of sort of transparency, really, to explain where this has all come from, because you'll notice that it wasn't just me that had the financial information sort of ready to go quite early on Saturday. There was other journalists that were involved as well and had stories out fairly quickly and had a lot of background information to Wolves's financials going through into the current financial year or the year that's going forward. So it's important to mention, I think, that essentially myself and a group of other journalists from various different outlets were all invited into Wolves to have a sort of presentation and discussion and Q&A backgrounder with the financial experts at the club. We sat down with Wolves's accountant, the man behind all of this. I don't envy him, put it that way. All of this work he's got to put together, and we were able to sort of, well, we were presented with the information first. We were able to query it, question it. Myself and a lot of the other journalists unless you do specialize in it, are not financial experts, and we have to try and get our head around it as best we can to then inform supporters, those that also aren't financial experts. It's not an easy thing to do. So I thought, out of transparency, to show that I think the club is trying to be open and honest about it and not really hide anything, that it was important to mention that. And that's where a lot of
and commendable as well to do that from the club's point of view. They didn't need to do that. A lot of other clubs wouldn't do that. But to invite yourself, to invite other journalists in there to be fully transparent with the situation, and also for them to, because the club want, you know, them to, and the fans to understand the details as well. I thought that was credit to them and a fantastic thing to do as well.
Yeah, definitely. And then the interview with Matt Hobbs, which we'll call on to afterwards, that was the same day. And a lot of all those journalists that were there for the sort of financial briefing were able to then go on to speak to Matt on record as well. So, yeah, it was a really beneficial afternoon at the training ground, because it allowed us to present this information, but also to question it, query it. You know, it wasn't a case of, right, this is what you're putting out, this is what you're told. It was an opportunity for us to question the facts, figures, and everything that has been put out there. So I thought it was a really worthwhile exercise. That's the first thing I'll say. I'll try not to drag on too long. I'll try and keep it as simple as I can, because, as I say, and I've mentioned, I replied to a couple of people on Twitter on Saturday as well, that it's not easy for us to get our heads around this. We're not financial experts. We've done a lot of work over the last sort of 18 months or so to get ourselves in a position where we can hopefully present this information in a way that is digestible for supporters as well. If you're not an accountant, it's not easy to take in. So I will do my best to put it to you. So I'll start just with the actual financial accounts. This was for the year ending 22-23, to ending May 23. So it's important to mention these are the year prior, which I know some people do get confused with. So just bear that in mind. And yes, Wolves made a £67 million loss. This is following a £46.1 million loss for the year prior, which was 21-22. And that was really expected, to be honest. So you'll remember last summer when all of this kicked off with Junior Lopetegui in pre-season and we were over in Portugal, you'll remember that I and others reported at the time that Wolves would make a loss in the financial year 2022-23 of around about 60 to 80 million were the sort of forecasts at that time. And it ended up being 67, so that was spot on. So not a surprise that Wolves made this hefty loss, but it is hefty and eye-watering nonetheless. And a lot of this came from, you know, increased spend on players. I mean, they brought in Nathan Collins, Hwang, obviously his loan becoming permanent, Nunes, Guedes, Kalajic, Diego Costa, Lamina, Dawson, Sarabia, Bentley, João Gomes, the list goes on. They did make some healthy profit on selling some players, Morgan Gibbs-White and a few others involved as well, but they spent big in that summer and, of course, in the January to stay in the league as well, and that had a big say on the finances for that year. You've also got to bear in mind that the revenue went up slightly, but it was inconsequential, really, in comparison to how much they'd spent on the player trading side of things. And then there's a couple of the small details that fans probably don't think about. And to be honest, it hadn't really sprung to my mind either, is that where the club finish in the league and the amount of live TV games that they have impact all of these figures as well. You get around about 2.8 million for each position you finish higher up in the Premier League. And obviously Wolves finished 10th the season prior and 13th last season. That made an impact. They had 16 live games the year before, only 12 up until in that financial year, last financial year, and that was £850,000 a game, roughly, for each TV game, which is a huge amount of money. So you then throw in operating costs, Bruno Lage leaving, Lopetegui coming, who was on massive wages. All of this added up really to a really very difficult year, and that's why we saw what we did last summer, where Wolves sold so many players, brought in very few players, obviously lost Lopetegui in the process, and Gary Neal came in. So it all makes sense when you look at it through that sort of timeline. Before I get on to the 23-24 sort of forecasts, just one final thing to mention. The club owners, Fosun, added £64 million to the club overall within the 22-23 financial year. They've since added a further £18 million. As it stands, that is a loan, but that will be converted to equity, so Wolves won't pay any of that back And it will be money that folks have put into the club. And that will relate sort of more directly to stuff that Matt Hobbs said, which we'll come on to in a little bit. So that's really sort of a fairly brief breakdown of the 22-23 financial year accounts. As I said, expected, but certainly eye-watering. And then what, you know, a massive benefit, which you don't get this obviously in the 22-23 accounts, is when we were at Compton and speaking to the accountant, we had an opportunity to have a look at the forecasts for the financial year that is, well, coming to an end in April this year, coming up next month, is the 23-24 financial year. Now, the confusing thing for supporters, and again, I totally appreciate that I've, you know, do my best to explain it because it is confusing for people who aren't financial experts like us as well, is that these figures for this financial year, we won't get until this time next year. So we don't know the exact number, how much Wolves will lose in, or you lose or make, but I'll explain why in a second, in that financial year. But what we do know is the sort of forecast for where they are with the Premier League's profit and sustainability regulations, formerly FFP, now PSR. I will refer to it as PSR going forward. I think it's the right thing to do, but just to make that clear for everyone. And obviously the rules state, as we've gone through quite a few times, I'm sure a lot of fans know this by now, is that you can't make more than £105 million loss over a rolling three-year period.
Yeah. 105, that's correct. 105.
105, yeah. 105 okay. million. The sort of headline figures from the accounts, 46 million, 67 million, obviously going into this year, that would, it would seem to fans like you have to make a huge or a fairly decent profit. But the first thing I need to mention is that there are numbers and figures that go into the full company accounts, which every company puts together, that don't go in to the PSR figure. And so hence why Wolves are likely to make another loss in the 23-24 accounts, which again, we won't know that number until this time next year. But that doesn't mean that they're in breach of PSR. And the things that you can spend on that don't count towards PSR are things like the academy, women's football, infrastructure, charity endeavours, community endeavours, things like that. So those kind of figures, that will be a fairly decent figure. You're looking at around 50 million for a club like Wolves. That won't be taken into account for PSR, but it does go into the club's accounts. So the sort of headline figures from the club accounts that come out via Companies House isn't the exact number that goes into PSR. And with that, we were able to see a forecast of how far away from that £105 million limit Wolves will be. And
or set the to be, yeah.
Yeah, set to be. And the buffer is only going to be 2.7 million. They're only going to be around 2.7 million away from the PSR limit, which seems alarming. It seems like they're so close to going over and breaching the rules. But the difference there is, as obviously this was only last week we had this meeting, as it stands, those forecasts are based off Wolves finishing 17th in the Premier League.
Yeah.
And that is a deliberate thing from the club.
They just survival.
Exactly. They would prefer to budget off that 17th finish, which Wolves are very, very likely to finish way above that. Of course they are. But they would prefer to budget off that, knowing that if calamity struck in the next 11 games, that Wolves would not be financially struggling. And they know that, right, this is our bottom line. We're 100% safe from a financial point of view. Now let's try and progress on the pitch. So that's the first thing to mention. On top of that, Wolves will have more likely than not some more TV games between now and the end of the season. Mm-hmm. That'll add a bit more revenue on top as well. So at the moment,
like the
forecast,
Coventry City game, etc.
Yeah, exactly. So at the moment, the forecast is for Wolves to finish in terms of the profit and sustainability rules limit to be 2.7 million under the £105 million limit. But Wolves, in reality, will finish a fair chunk better off than that. It's purely from the club trying to budget for the worst possible scenario to ensure the club is in a stable position. And then the final thing I think to mention really on that is a sort of small, interesting tidbit that I think sort of ties together why Wolves didn't make a signing in January, a striker signing in January, which of course Gary Neil desperately wanted. Gary Neil would have been shown that Wolves, look, we're only 2.7 off this PSR limit. Gary's argument at that time would have been, well, we're not going to finish 17th. We're going to have more money to spend. But I think that from the club's point of view, and I think Gary understands this, they have to be cautious, particularly because of the position they've been in. And then on top of that, you've got the settlement, basically, to cancel Johnny Castro Otto's contract, which sort of indirectly stopped Wolves from bringing a striker in. But Wolves felt that it had to be done to, I suppose, keep harmony within the group and to move on a player that had obviously caused some issues with that training ground incident. So I hope that makes sense. And of course, you know, Judy, you let me know if there's any questions that don't make sense, but I would encourage anyone to tweet me as well to hopefully get a better idea of where this is at. If for any reason nothing makes sense, let me know and I'll hopefully try and respond.
No, well done, sir. Look, it's not easy, and I'm sure you probably listened to this and you might have to rewind and listen to it again. It is complicated, and like Liam says, it's complicated not just for, you know, the journalists who are trying to get head around it, but also supporters as well. And there's no easy fix. You can't talk about this in a couple of minutes and expect to know all the intricacies about it. I would say that's well put together. And like you say, Liam is always open to have a discussion. If you do tweet him, then at Liam Keane, make sure you do. What I would say as well, a couple of things. These are the Premier League prizes for last season, but you said that Wolves are 2. What was it? What was
2.7 million.
2.7 million pounds. Okay, so 2.7 million. If it was last season, Everton finished 17th. They were 113.3 million. They were awarded by the Premier League, and Wolves are currently in 11th place. That was taken by Crystal Palace last year. They were 128.2 million. So they're normally quite similar. But as you can see, 113 to where Wolves are at this moment in time, 128. That's a difference of about £15 million there. Wolves could finish 8th and then all of a sudden 8th or 9th. And then there's a difference between the best part of £30 million. They could finish a lot lower. And of course, you've got to be cautious. But just to give you an idea, that it's around £12, £13 million more if that was the same similar payouts to last season. So that gives you a gauge. I guess a question from the fans who want to know for the future, Liam, they're saying, right, what does this mean to our spending next season? Does that mean that we can't spend any money? Does that mean we've got to sell? Does that mean that we've got to, or can you just sell to obviously get more money into the transfer kitty? But if this was the situation, would Wolves need to sell do they need to sell Pedro Neto next season? Do they have to do that?
Yeah, that's the burning question, isn't it? So the first thing to mention is that in this rolling three-year period and the way that PSR works, the 21-22 year, which was the £46 million loss, that drops off and you go through into the £67 million loss, whatever the loss will be, which is expected to be a loss for the 23-24 year, but it's expected to be a much lower loss. And then it comes into the financial year we're going into right now, which will then make up the 3 years. So dropping off that first year, that £46 million loss, obviously gives you a bit more wiggle room because that's a fairly hefty chunk that has been knocked off the PSR parameters, if that's the best way to put it. And that takes me quite nicely on to what we spoke about with Matt Hobbs, which at the release of this podcast is already out there. It's on the Express Star website. It's about 2,600 words of Matt Hobbs to dive through, and it goes through various subjects about Gary Neal's contract, which they're planning to have conversations with him over a new deal in the summer, and then where Wolves are at from a financial point of view and going forward from a sort of football strategy point of view. And the strategy for what Wolves want to do and what they need to do next year ties into this. You'll remember, I think it was around April last year, my article that sort of broke the news around Wolves' PSR concerns and what they were going to have to do in the summer just gone in terms of letting a lot of players go. And that involved that article included information about Wolves' strategy going forward, and that they wanted players that want to be at the club, players that are it was around about £8 to £15 million was sort of where Wolves have got their best value for signings. But it doesn't mean they won't go slightly over if they have to on the right player. But they certainly won't be looking to spend £30, £40, £50 million on players like they have done in the past. And that's, you know, where Wolves are at, trying to unearth talents that will become bigger assets going forward. So when you come to this summer, and we spoke to Matt Hobbs about that, the first thing to mention is that he made it very clear, from a financial point of view, Wolves do not need to sell anyone. So there's not an initial necessity that if Wolves don't sell Pedro Neto for 70 million, Wolves are going to be in trouble financially. That is not the case. Wolves do not need to sell anyone. There's no necessity to have it done in the summer, absolutely. But what he did say is that he wants, and this was the really key phrase here, is he wants, from a footballing point of view, Wolves to be sustainable. He wants the football to feed itself. He does not want to be relying on Fosun to be pumping money in to allow Wolves to make signings. And what he, on record, what he admitted was that that likely means that Matt Hobbs, every summer, has to make one big sale of a player to fund the evolution of this Wolves team. And obviously fans will be frustrated because it means you might lose Pedro Neto, you might lose João Gomes, you might lose
Max Cunha,
although they Wolves paid a lot of money for him. Would they be able to get the right money back? Maybe not. But someone like a Huang, you know, there's a Kilman. There's lots of players that you could look at and say Wolves could get a big money here. And when it comes down to the books and their book figure, someone like a Kilman would be worth a lot more to sell for the club than it would be a Cunha they spent so much money on. So that's where Wolves are at. They want to be able to evolve this side, but that includes likely making one big sale to fund that. And he did say as well, I don't want to sell any more than two starters, is what he said, which I thought was an interesting phrase as well, or turn of phrase. And you're in a scenario now where Wolves don't need to sell, but if they have the right money for a player at the right time, and they can, and this was the point Matt Hobbs made, and we can sell one player and invest in the squad rather than selling two, three, four players and having to rebuild a squad, that would be preferable for where the club are at. And I understand fans will be frustrated because you don't want to lose your best players. But Wolves, and I've made this point in previous podcasts, Wolves have been guilty in the past of not selling players at their highest value. And you look at a club like Brighton, who have done that time and again and reinvested in the squad, and they unearth new talents almost every year, and they bring new players through. Now, obviously people will argue how long can that go on for, but I think if you have the right setup behind you to bring these kind of players in, you look at João Gomes, Wolves got there first and got him in from South America, and he's a player who I think will go on to do big things in the game and probably go for a lot of money at one point. And I think Matt Hobbs thinks that as well. So if, as long as the infrastructure's there, the setup's there, you can afford to lose one, maybe two players, bring in big money, and then make several signings that allows Gary O'Neill to create the team in his own vision. And if it doesn't go well, we'll be the first people to say, look, Wolves messed up. They shouldn't have sold Pedro Neto. It's not a position here where we're praising the club for necessarily selling players, but they have to make it work regardless of where they're at. And that's really Wolves' strategy going forward.
Yeah, and look, and that's very much in terms of crude financial figures and what it would bring. But also, you've got to think of the football and the game aspect and the human aspect and the player aspect. And there is an evolution there. And if, you know, regardless of facts, figures, you know, monetary values, if Pedro Neto gets an offer from Manchester City and Liverpool and Arsenal and Chelsea this summer, very difficult to keep someone who wants to go somewhere who's maybe, I'm not going to say served his time, but done a great job at this football club and wants to progress his footballing career at his prime age, and Wolves are going to get paid handsomely for it. That's just the way the world goes round. You know, Wolves aren't a top four side. They haven't got, you know, billions to be splashing the cash and you know, constant income from all sorts of commercial, you know, exploits all over the world. They haven't got that. They're trying to get there, but they haven't got that. So it's just the nature of the beast, really. That's how it happens. And it will continue to happen for a long time to come.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it, sort of the question that comes from that in my mind, and it's something I asked Matt Hobbs about, is how do you then balance ambition with this strategy? Because, and this isn't me sort of disrespecting fans, because I get it. Look, we're all football fans. We want our club to do well. We want our club to go win everything. But if Wolves made it into Europe this season, there would be some supporters saying, well, how do we make Champions League next year? If Wolves won the Premier League this year, there'd be some people saying, right, let's go win the Champions League next season. you're not going to please everyone. And I think, unfortunately, that's just, you know, where it's at. And that's for all walks of life. I think me and you know that as well. You're not going to please everyone when it comes to our reporting. It's just not the way it's going to happen. And I asked Matt Hobbs about that, and he said, look, the best way of us going about that, whether they like what I've said or don't, and he said, like, I think there'll be a lot of people that don't like it, is that the one thing they can't accuse him or the club of is not being honest and open and telling you how it is and where the club are at. There's a lot to be said, I think, for Wolves. Let's say, for example, Pedro Neto goes to 70 million in the summer and Wolves bringing 3-4 signings to invest in the squad with that money. Then the squad arguably is in a much healthier place. It depends on who they bring in. Not all signings are going to be a success. They have to make sure those signings are a success for that to be beneficial. But there's an argument right now, without knowing who those players would be, that Wolves would be in a better place when it comes to the squad. We wouldn't be talking now about injuries. We wouldn't be talking now about Cunha and Hwang being out and Wolves having no striker available. So there's lots of give and take here. There's a lot of big decisions Wolves have to get right, which is their biggest challenge. But if they do get those decisions right and they are able to work around it like Brighton have, then they'll be in a much healthier position because of it. And one final point, Matt Hobbs said, I don't expect the market to be where it was in the last year or two where Chelsea are coming in playing 100 million for Brighton players. He said, I don't think that market will be there. So essentially he was sort of playing down maybe some of the figures Wolves would get. But Wolves are still in the position, because they don't need to sell, that they will demand the figure that they believe is the right figure, and they have no necessity to sell anyone. If the right figure's not there, no players will go. It also might mean that not many players come in, but it certainly means that Wolves won't lose their best players if the right money's not there. And if the right money's there, not many people can complain, because Wolves have got what they are owed, and you then move forward to hopefully rebuild the squad.
And that brings us on very nicely, actually, to the final point of your discussion with Matt Hobbs and obviously the story that's come out today. And if they did, if and when they do sell Pedro Neto for 50, 60, 70 million, whatever that will be, if that does happen, Wolves will be able to bring in multiple players. And the most important thing is that there's an open, honest element with the journalists that Wolves have done, but there's a trust element from Wolves in their manager. Because Gary O'Neill has not had a summer yet to bring in his own players. He's using, and doing it very well, someone else's squad. He's using someone else's players. And my goodness, is he delighted with some of them, and he will be for many years to come, hopefully. But at the same time, and we saw in January, it didn't happen for him, he will be itching to, one, have some proper money to spend without 50, you know, 500 grand there, 100 grand there. Can we afford that weekly wage? Can we get that guy in for a six-month contract? He will hopefully have a lot more capabilities to sign multiple players and to mould what he thinks he needs, quality and also quantity as well, but both. I mean, they're going to sign both to get a depth of squad and some of the players that he knows will add to make additional success to this squad and bring additional success to this squad that are missing at this moment in time. I'm sure he will have plenty of names in mind, plenty of positions in mind. And of course, with him doing so well, they will be looking to, hopefully, that one of the first signings of the season will be an extended and a new contract for Gary O'Neill.
Yes, yeah, as I mentioned at the top of this section, they are planning, at the very least, conversations in the summer over a new deal. He signed a 3-year contract when he arrived in August. But the nature of how well he's done and the nature of football means that he will be rewarded financially, as well as I would imagine another year or two at the very least on top of his current deal, and you would expect that includes a big release clause as well, because Wolves don't want to lose Gary O'Neill, but they are aware that other people are looking at him, and they'd be silly not to with the job he's done. Interesting point that Matt Hobbs made. He said, I just wish that Gary was able to have a pre-season with this team before this year, because if he had, imagine where we could be this season, which I think is quite a valid point. And the Wolves have not only been fairly open with all of this information, and it's obviously this interview that we had with Matt Hobbs, but they've also, and Matt Hobbs has done this himself specifically, he's been very open with Gary in terms of where the club are at. Unless something changes and there's something we're unaware of, I don't envisage any time soon Gary Neil turning around in a press conference or privately and saying, I've been blindsided here, I didn't expect this to come. He's aware of where Wolves were financially when they came in, when he came into the job in August, and he's aware of where they'll be coming up in this summer. And that means, he's aware, that it may mean Wolves have to sell a player for big money to reinvest and evolve this side. And in some ways, as much as you never want to lose your best players, in some ways I think he'll relish the opportunity to have a little bit of money to do something and make this team, you know, in his own vision. And it goes back to me talking about that Liverpool game and how they set up with Bellegarde on that day. That may mean we see an evolution of how Wolves play in the year or two to come and how long it takes Gary Neil to make that evolution, provided nothing goes wrong in the short term, which obviously anything can happen. So, I think Wolves are in a much healthier position going forward. Look, I don't expect them to go out and out of nowhere be spending crazy money next summer. I don't think that the market's not there for that. First of all, you saw how quiet it was in January, but equally, financially, where Wolves are at. But if they are able to make a big sale, they'll have more opportunities to bring in a handful of players and hopefully make a stronger squad rather than stronger individuals.
Yeah, he's done a fantastic job, Gary. I'm just going to play devil's advocate for a minute and just say, okay, maybe let's say Gary O'Neill, Wolves, let's be honest, still took a gamble on bringing Gary O'Neill. It was a fantastic job for Gary O'Neill to take, amazing job for Gary O'Neill to take this summer. You know, he was sitting down in Portugal and probably sunning and saying, I'd like to get back into football. But I don't think, you know, in his wildest dreams did he think that he'd be managing Wolverhampton Wanderers Football Club also, you know, before the start of the season. So Wolves have obviously, he's repaid that faith, but they've shown a lot of faith in him as well to bring him on board. Now, they offered him a three-year deal, which at the time, Liam, we discussed and we said, it's quite surprising that he signed a three-year deal. That's quite a long contract. And I might be wrong here, but if they offered Gary Neil a rolling contract, then he might have taken that, because what a fantastic opportunity. And we were surprised a little bit that really someone who did a fantastic job at Bournemouth, but his rookie season as manager, to give him a three-year deal. Just because he's done great, does that mean that Wolves need to pay him more money and give him a longer deal straight away? I mean, they gave him a three-year deal, so hopefully they're hoping for success. Could they not wait another 12 months and then discuss it? Surely if he's still doing well, Gary O'Neill will still be, you know, wanting to sign a new deal. And if his head is getting turned somewhere, then is it only just to kind of, like you say, add more money to that compensation deal and maybe adding a year? Does it make that much of a difference, really, the way that things are these days? And, you know, managers obviously don't go for anywhere near as much as football as if an England came in, or, you know, I don't know, a Chelsea came in, or Manchester United came in, or someone of that ilk. Surely an extra year on a contract doesn't really make much difference these days in terms of compensation.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting point. I think the first thing to say, we were quite critical at the time, weren't we, about that three-year contract? And I'm glad we've been proven wrong. But these exact
not because we didn't think he was, you know, up to the job. It was a case that I didn't feel they needed to offer a long-term contract after what had gone on prior.
Yeah, no, exactly. What it comes down to, and it's words that we used in this interview as well, is showing a bit of belief in someone. So initially, that contract, that three-year, would have come down to that. It was, right, Matt Hobbs is pretty certain that Gary Neil is his man. He thinks there's something special about him, is the way he described it. He's done his homework. He's spoken to people at Liverpool, spoken to people in the game that know him and got an idea of what he's like. Obviously had that presentation with him down in London and decided that the three-year contract was not only warranted but was showing a belief in a manager that probably needed that little bit of belief shown in him because of what happened at Bournemouth. And then for the same reasons, not only the success Wolves have had, which obviously is the catalyst for these contract talks happening in the first place, but for the same reasons, really, that is why they'll be doing it again. Because one, you show him the belief and the backing to say, no, look, you're our man. We want you to stay here. And there's no suggestion that his head will be turned, of course. It's just that we know there's interest in him from elsewhere. And Wolves have said that, look, if he does go, Wolves have coaches and managers in mind and people that they're keeping an eye on, as they do with players. If a player goes, they've got a list of players they want to replace them with. So it's just the nature of the beast and how football is. But it's not just that, it's the potential to give in the belief and everything, but also add in a fairly hefty release clause. That means that Wolves will be paid fairly handsomely if Gary Neal is poached and goes out elsewhere. So it's albeit, yes, they're gonna. It's always a little bit of a risk when you give anyone, player, manager, coach, anyone a better contract, paying them more money. It's always a little bit of a risk to some degree, but it protects Wolves going forward if at any point the England job comes calling or a big top four club comes calling. It may never happen, but if that opportunity arises, that Wolves are protected. So I can see it from their point of view. At the same time, it's only been one season, so playing devil's advocate as you were, Wolves have probably got to do a lot more for in the next season or two to come for Gary Neal to maybe even warrant a job like that. But it's certainly been an excellent start from him, and probably a deserved reward getting some sort of pay increase and new contract when it does come.
I agree. Well said, Liam. Long section there, lots to digest. Please, like I say, listen to it again. Financials, Matt Hobbs, the future, contracts, Gary O'Neill. I said to you at the start of this podcast, we'll stick to an hour, Liam, hopefully possible. And we're already 1 hour and 5 minutes in, but we'll start wrapping things up. But yeah, hopefully that all made sense. And if, like you say, if it didn't, then Liam, myself as well, always on hand, whether it's at the game, you see us on Saturday, or you want to ask us a question, or email us, or tweet us, and we'll endeavour to do our best and answer those that you've got. So great to hear from everybody. In the future. Right, before we go on and take some questions, a little word from now, Liam. I need you to play ball here, okay? I need you to play ball because this is an interesting one. There's a big product that's going for excellent prices at this moment in time, but it's going to need your guessing skills and you haven't got a great record. It's kettleandtoasterman.co.uk. Now, you're in a beautiful new house, Liam. How's your fridge and freezer looking at this moment in time? What have you got? What colour is it? Is it working perfectly? Was it someone that was already in there, or have you got a brand new one?
So, ones that were already here, they are white, and they are separate.
Oh, okay.
They are under the counter ones. One of them in a small little outhouse area we have. So, if you're being pretty honest, not the most ideal setup for both of them.
Yeah.
But livable for the time being, unless you've got a big offer to throw my way.
Oh, Liam, keen. Have I got an offer for you, baby? Also, you don't want to be crouching down to get the champagne, Prosecco, Lambrini, Shea Keen. You want to be able to stand up firm, chest out, show those muscles, those biceps, those lats, open the door like a real man. At eye level, and you can do that at kettleandtoasterman.co.uk with, and I mean, I'm looking through them now, Swan. Swan's a great, one of the top products possible in fridge freezers, retro fridge freezers. These are all the kind of like pastel colours, beautiful, gorgeous, double freezer on the bottom, fridge on the top, and they are going for a Swan song. Absolutely, it's absolutely incredible. They are beautiful, absolutely beautiful. Retro fridge, you've got in all different colours, orange, red, maroon, chrome, cream, blue, brown, literally absolutely gorgeous. There's about 3 to 4 in each colour left, and I'm looking at them, Kino, honestly, different class. But how much are they?
Wow. As you say, premium brand.
Yeah.
Great colours. Retro style, which is very popular these days.
Fridge freezer, remember. This is a tall fridge freezer. Absolutely top drawer.
You've got to be looking at it. It's easily, what, 700 quid?
Oh, well, I tell you what, 209 litres, 91 litre freezer capacity. Kino, it's less than half.
Less than half?
I actually genuinely think that this might tickle your fancy. £300.
£300?
That's, and we're talking about being on call 24/7. Through tweets and articles. That's a good 2 hours work for you, mate. That's 2 hours. And you can buy yourself a fridge freezer.
Bloody hell. I mean, I'll have to get on there straight away.
Honestly, the offers are there. There's about two to three in each colour, each design. I'd have a look because a couple of them are already sold out. In fact, I've just refreshed and two more sold out. And the black one's just gone. But there's some really good colours there. I think actually, look, we have to read a few things out. This is one of the best deals going. So if your fridge freezes on the blink, or you fancy a little bit of a splurge, £300, you can't say fairer than that. And of course, they'll deliver it as well. KellenToasterman.co.uk. Should we take some questions, Mr. Limkin? Okay. And try and get a fair few here. Okay, there's one that we'll spend a couple of minutes on. Rest of them, I really want to just smash out, okay?
Yeah.
Can you smash?
Oh, I certainly can.
Oh, Jesus. Sophia Goldsmith, keen or not keen, do we rest players against Fulham and go strong next Saturday against Coventry?
Yeah, it's a bit of a debate that some people have been having online, which I completely understand because the Coventry game is monumental. It's massive. But for the reasons I've already outlined in terms of where Wolves are at and where they're at in the league and the opportunities still in front of them with 11 games to go in the Premier League and with a week in between the two games as well, you have to just play your strongest team against Fulham and go for the win. Especially at Molineux, you know, it was a tight game with some VAR controversies a few months back in November. So, yeah, you have to go for it and you have to play your strongest team. And I think the way that Gary O'Neill is as a person, as a coach, the way he'll set his team up, I think he'll do exactly that. I think he will take it game by game and say, right, this is the game we've got to win. How do we win it? And what team do we play? I think that's the right way to approach it.
I concur. Andy Hodge, would it be hard to concentrate with a semi on and finish top seven?
It definitely is. definitely is hard to concentrate with all of them. Crikey.
Ollie Howard says, is it true that in the Neves deal there was a clause for him to return to Wolves like a first refusal if certain criteria is met, e.g. Wolves playing in Europe, etc.?
Wow, we would love Ruben Neves back in a Wolves shirt. I'm sure we would. Well, if it stops Joao Gomez from playing, then I don't know. There's question marks. But no, not as far as I'm aware. There's nothing of that ilk in there. Wolves got very good money. Didn't go to a rival. It was the perfect deal for Wolves at the time, at a time when they needed it as well. And I don't think so.
Reggie, what would you choose if offered either a guaranteed place in the FA Cup final or a guaranteed place in the Europa Conference League next season?
I really like this question. It's a really good question. It's weighted perfectly for it to be really tough.
It really is, because obviously you're in the final. You could be playing Man City in the final, could get beat, and you've had an FA Cup final appearance, but there's nothing to show for it.
Exactly. But this team is it's a one-off game. This team's got a bit about them.
But silverware, the opportunity for silverware.
And I think, exactly, I think the opportunity for silverware, the opportunity to win an FA Cup, Wolves have not won it since 1960. That is too big to turn down. I think you have to go with a final. And look, even if Wolves did lose to Man City in the final, it would be an unbelievable memory, Wolves getting to an FA Cup final in my lifetime, anyone else's lifetime, as it is anyway. So you have to take that. Conference League is definitely appealing. It really is. But I think you have to take the FA Cup final.
I think I agree with you. I think you've got to take the FA Cup final. I think if this was pre or middle of Nuno and they hadn't got into Europe, then I would probably take the Europa League because you guaranteed Conference League, because you guaranteed European football. But now they've done that, I feel you've got to take the final.
Yeah,
so my answer would be different if it was pre, finishing seventh.
Yeah, I get that. FA Cup finals are so big, though. I just can't. I think even if it was pre-Europa League under Nuno, I think I would still go FA Cup final. I think it's such a massive occasion, regardless of who you're playing and how it ends.
Cool Hand Aid says, with our forward crisis, would it be a desperate shout to play Doc up front? Matt Doherty, do you think it would be detrimental to Nathan Fraser?
I think you mentioned this to me off mic fairly recently. I'm sure you did. And said we might see Doc as a striker. And to be honest, I wouldn't be that surprised.
So, I mean, maybe not for the start of the game. This season. We've seen Johnny at right wing at some point this season. Blackpool, yeah. I think it was.
No, yeah, you're right, yeah. So I don't think it's a crazy shout. I really don't. Especially with Wolves around, how sort of desperate the numbers are in that attacking side of the field. Would it be detrimental to Nathan Fraser? I don't necessarily think so. He's 19. They're clearly building him up. He needs a lot of He needs time, and as much as Wolves might be forced into using him, and to be honest, I could see him getting a start actually some point soon, whether it's this weekend or not, I'm not too sure, but I could see it happening. I just think Wolves are going to be careful with Nathan Fraser, and I think he knows that. He knows that, he's young, he needs time to get up to speed. So I don't think it would be detrimental to him, no, because he's getting opportunities regardless.
Adrian says, with our 15-year-old sub last week, what's your highlight when you were 15? And he says, oh, unbelievable, if Judah can remember that far back. What was your highlight when you were 15 years old, Liam?
Well, when you were 15, what would it, was it like 1933? 1870. Oh, blimey. I don't think I could say it on a podcast, to be honest.
No, oh, come on. Of course you can. No, it's no one listening, lad.
Oh, yeah, you're right. 15. I have to tell you what, I'm getting old, mate. That was a long time. That was 12 years ago for me. Getting on. I can't even think back to what year would I? So I suppose it's 12 years ago. It's not that hard math, actually, is it, when you think about it? Mm. I don't know. I really don't know. You were probably playing, you were like on a penny farthing, weren't you? going around the
show. Tell you where I was outside a takeaway, that's for certain.
Oh, absolutely.
Highlight when I was 15, probably a beef chow mein. But then with some chicken balls. I love the sweet sour chicken. Those chicken balls with the sweet and sour sauce on top. Egg fried rice. Oh, my God.
You're getting me excited now.
Oh, that'll be my highlight. That or winning at Spin the Bottle, although someone would definitely be losing if I got chosen. Crikey.
Feels, you know what? I've got mine.
Go on.
Yeah, someone would be losing with you, absolutely. not that she'll ever listen to this anyway, but...
oh, of course. She'll never listen to it. No one listens.
My darling partner, Rosie...
Oh, here she is.
We got together when we were 15.
Wow.
So there you go. So that's my highlight.
Okay. This could have gone Pete's song. Oh, God. Thank God you finished there. Right, okay. Excellent news.
I tell you what, I could have gone a lot further there.
Oh, well. Don't. Oh, God. Right, okay. Moving on. Jesus. We're going to have the bloody lawyers on to us here. Right, last one. Wolfpack, what players from the current bottom three teams would you take at Wolves in the summer? Good question.
Now, I've got a list here of two, three, five players. Do you want to very quickly either give your opinion or guess on which five players I've got?
I'll give my opinion. I've got three players that I would take.
Go on, you hit me and I'll tell you if I've got any of them.
And you won't like one of them, I don't think.
Oh, God.
Okay, first two are from Burnley.
Wow. Go on then, yes. Hit me. I want to hear it.
Okay. Now, this guy's had a lot of injuries, but I really like him. I'm not saying these are not necessarily starters, but for squad depth and quality, that's what I'm signing for the summer as well. You know, it's some quality and quantity, yeah? Okay? We're not just walking straight into the first team here. You ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. Sander Berge. I think he's a great player. Honestly, I think... He's had a few injuries, but I think he's absolute Rolls Royce when he's fit, and I think he'll be an excellent addition to the squad.
Wow, he is on my list.
Hey, come on, baby!
There you go.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Okay, do you want me to give you another one that I think is going to be on your list? Well, shall I give you the Burnley player that I know is not on your list?
Yeah, give me your three. That's one. Okay, the other two.
You know, we talked a little bit about centre backs, and I still think that Wolves need to sign a centre-back this summer. I really do. Yes, you've got Craig Dawson, Totti Gomez. Santiago Bueno has done a really good job when he's come in. Max Kilman, of course. But I do think if you're going to play three at the back, you need one more. I need one more who's really going to be pushing those three starters. And look, Craig Dawson's had a good season overall, but there's been a couple of games from him. And, you know, Father Time is undefeated. You know, he's going to get a year older next year. I still think he's going to be a starter. But 23 years old... Honestly, this guy, German footballer, under 21 international, he's 23 years old now. And again, has had a couple of injuries this season. He's out at the moment, but he's back next week. But is an absolute monster and can score goals, is a goal threat. And that is Jordan Bayer from Burnley. Really, really strong player. Borussia Mönchengladbach, I think it was in Hamburg on loan, and then was on loan at Burnley before they signed him permanently. But really good, strong player, really good age as well at 23, and I think would be an excellent addition.
Interesting. I don't have him, unfortunately, but it's an interesting shout. Give me your third one, and then I'll give you the rest of mine.
Well, the third one we've discussed in this podcast, I think, very recently, and that is Elijah Adebayo, who I think would be an excellent addition up front. Would really put pressure on the front three, can score goals, has got the height, has got the confidence now. We obviously saw him emerge at Walsall. Great move to Luton. He's gone from strength to strength. Scored goals already this season. And look, hat-trick as well. And I think at that age as well, you know, looking at age, and I think the right age, 26-year-old, he's going to be coming into probably the best years of his life. And, you know, at 26 to 30, that's probably when a striker is at the very, very best. Will probably cost more than the other two, I'm sure he will. But at the same time, I would love Wolves to go and make a move for someone like that.
And obviously, he is also on my list.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Adebayo. As we said on the last poddy, I was Warsaw reporter at the time when he was at Warsaw. I think he's a very good player. So
I do like Doherty as well at Luton, but those are my three I went for.
Okay, well, I've got Doherty, Adebayo. The other three I've got, you just mentioned one there, Doherty at Luton. I've got him down there. I think he'd be a decent shout. I think for me, Adebayo, Berge, and one I haven't mentioned yet are probably above the other two. So Doherty's not like a desperate one for me, but I think he's a decent player.
Yeah.
Another one that is a Burnley player.
Oh, okay.
That is a bit. It's not one of my ones that I was top of the list, but I thought was an okay shout.
Oh no, don't. I hope it's. If it's this player, then me and you're going to fall out.
Tell me who do you think it is? Oh, I won't lie to you. I promise.
I hope his surname doesn't start with a T and he's in goal.
Okay, it's not. Don't worry.
Okay,
it's not Trafford.
I think he's so overrated.
And, yeah, actually, a lot of fans in response to the Wolfpack's question actually said Trafford, but it's not for me.
No.
Not for
me. Okay, so weak. Go on, carry on.
I've gone for, and he's a Burnley player at the moment.
Okay.
But on loan from Chelsea.
Okay.
Fofana, the striker.
Oh, okay.
I don't mind him. I don't mind him. I think he's got a little bit about him. He's quick, got an eye for goal, scored a couple for Burnley already.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mind him. I think there's an option there.
Yeah.
And then my final one, which I think quite a few people said, but I completely agree with.
Okay, Sheffield United. I haven't read the replies, so I'm not.
Oh, there you go. Okay. Sheffield United, Ben Brereton-Diaz.
Oh, okay.
I think he's a good striker. He's actually not been playing he had a little knock actually at Sheffield United, but since he first came in and scored a couple of goals, he's not been playing as much. I'm sure the knock playing an impact on that. But I think he's still on loan, isn't he, from Villarreal, I believe
it
is. I think he's a good player. I think he's a good forward. Someone who was very heavily sought after by Premier League clubs before he moved to Spain. So I think he'd do well.
Yeah, and the good news about those three, and a really good discussion, thanks to Wolfpack for sending that in, is that these are all attainable players. These are all realistic signings. These aren't, you know, you look at free agents and people put together these free agent lists at the start of the season. Oh, let's go for this. I'd rather go for these type of players. And I know a lot of people say, especially if they get relegated, or don't pick a player from a relegated team. I mean, I don't believe that for a second. I mean, what do you think? James Maddison's useless to you? You know what I mean? Like, I don't believe that for a second just because they've gone down, just because they've gone through a relegation. Well, that means that they're useless. I mean, that's absolute rubbish. And these are the type of players. And look, I dare say there will be discussions in January, discussions in the summer, discussions going on at this moment in time with Wolves identifying different lists. And I dare say that maybe one or two of those that we've discussed today, Liam, may be on Gary O'Neill's list as well come the summer.
Well, I'd like to think so, because I think that's potentially in some of the markets the Wolves might look at as well.
Absolutely.
They've certainly looked at the sort of Championship or homegrown market a lot more than they had done in the previous regime. So, yeah, I think it'd be an interesting one to keep an eye on.
Second, I've just got a call coming in from Gary. You're right, pal. Yeah, you know. Sorry, I think we can get a deal done. You know, I think he'll want to come. All right. Yeah, Nakina wants a cut too as well. All right, Gazler. All right, Gaz. One second, I've got to go. Just finish off the pod. Cheers. Okay, should we move on?
Well, he knows you well from your time at Borough, doesn't he? Good mate of yours,
every time, mate. Every time, loves it. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Hasn't mentioned it once in the last 6-7 months. Doesn't know who you are.
I haven't spoken to him. I know, he can't even get your name right, let alone mine. Crikey.
Whoa. We don't go that far.
Right, should we move on?
Let's do it.
Fulham home Saturday, baby. Kickoff time. Can you get the kickoff time right, please, to people? I don't want to get them arriving half an hour late to the game.
Oh dear.
Do I need to check for you? Do I need to check?
No.
It took your word last time.
3 p.m. Saturday, easy. No messing around.
Okay, 3 o'clock Saturday. It's Wolves against Fulham. And by the way, Liam, before I start, and we've got 5 minutes left or 4 or 5 minutes left. Fulham riding high, had some obviously a fantastic win last weekend. People are going, oh, Fulham. Well, let's just concentrate on Coventry. I'm sorry, but the last time I looked, and I might be wrong. In fact, I probably am wrong. Are Fulham 3 points behind Wolves in the table?
They are.
Right. Last time I looked, and I looked at Wolves' squad, and I looked at Fulham's squad, I think Wolves' squad I would have 100 times out of 100.
Yeah, I think so. I definitely think that Fulham have got some very good players in there. But I think Wolves' squad's definitely stronger, 100%.
I would rather have Wolves' squad. So last time I looked, Liam, Wolves away this on Saturday, are they?
No, why?
No, they're at home. Exactly what I'm saying. More points than in the league. For me, a better squad, regardless of the players that are out, at home, at Molineux, at 3 o'clock. I'm sorry, but Wolves can quite easily, for me, I can quite easily see a Wolves winning this game. I don't see any reason why they can't. Yes, they've got to negotiate a few issues in the squad, but let's not think about 2 weeks' time. Let's concentrate on this game, because this is a very attainable 3 points that we can get right back on track with European football in the European glob, as you call it, Mr. Liam Keane. I like that at the start of the show. How are we looking Saturday? What are you feeling? What are your thoughts? Don't kill me now when I've said that I'm very optimistic going into the game.
No, I am as well, to be honest, because for the similar reasons you've given, that this Wolves team's responded quite well to setbacks and adversity throughout this whole season. I mean, the summer itself was one massive setback that Wolves overcame. And
that was, that was just the pre-season room that we were both in the bedroom with that see-through shower.
I know, it was always nice watching you have a little peek when I was trying to wash myself.
A little what?
A peek. It's terrible for you. Yeah, look, Wolves are still in a very good place. I think the people are getting carried away with this FA Cup game, and I'm not undermining how important it is, not by any stretch of the imagination. It's massive, but you can't overlook the games they've got in front of it, and the only one now being Fulham, and it's a big opportunity for Wolves. Wolves have got no divine right to go beat any team in the Premier League, but equally, there's no reason at all why they cannot win this game. As you mentioned, at home, strong squad against a Fulham team that are at the moment in good form, but have had dips themselves, and we know how Premier League football is. The margins are very, very fine. It will be interesting how Wolves react from injury issues. Again, another problem. And for me, the biggest issue Wolves have got is filling that number nine void. It's been something they've had to battle with all season. Obviously, the best period of that was sort of first third of the season or so, when Huang was in fine goal scoring form playing as a striker. Other than that, he's been away at Asia Cup. They've had Cunha out injured, then him out injured. They've had Bellegarde chipping in. They've had a fluid front three. They've had to find solutions, and they're going to have to find another very difficult to find solution for Saturday's game. And in that, I think, if I'm honest, it probably is Bellegarde playing as a nine.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, and I, that's not a disrespect to him, I just don't think it's been working, but he's now got an opportunity in front of him. And other than that, I think the team pretty much picks itself. Sarr in goal, Semedo, Kilman on the right, Dawson, Totti, Aitnori, Lamina, and you would imagine João Gomes, provided that he's been okay this week. Obviously, he had a bit of a tight hamstring, missed the Newcastle game. Neto left, Sarabia right, Bellegarde through the middle. It doesn't give you many options on the bench. You're looking at Fraser, Chirewa, probably Noah Lamina on the bench, but whether he actually gets any minutes or not is very questionable. So it leaves you real bare bones, to be brutally honest. But you've got Tommy Doyle and Boubacar Traoré as options. You've got the option of bringing Hugo Bueno on and moving Aitnori further forward. Doc, obviously, on the bench as well.
Yeah.
You're going to have to get creative. And I think I think unless we hear more injury news tomorrow, I think it pretty much picks itself, the team. And you've got to go out there to try and put on a show for these supporters and attack.
Get back into this race.
Exactly. Attack at speed and pace and be exciting, as Wolves have been for the majority of the season.
Yeah, I think you're right, Liam. I completely agree. I think Bellegarde will get the nod in this game, with Aitnori being that option that I think they could push up as and when, if things are working, if things aren't working, depending on if they want to go a bit more defensive or change things around. If, you know, I don't think Bellegarde and Sarabia are 90-minute men. I don't think they'll ever be 90-minute more. Bellegarde maybe, but I don't think Sarabia's a 90-minute man, so it does have options. But I wouldn't be surprised if we discussed my point earlier on and maybe there was an Ait Nouri and a Hugo Bueno start, but I think that I would probably go with your team. Shall we do what we're giving away? We're not giving away a fridge, by the way.
Oh, what do we give away? What do we give away? It's a good question. We haven't done the blue shirt.
Okay,
for a while,
blue
have we?
Shirt. No, we do the blue shirt.
What was the description of that? Was it Arctic Ice or my
Arctic? Arctic Ice, wasn't it?
A bit of Arctic Ice.
Oh, let's give an Arctic Ice. We'll give a blue shirt away. Before I do the prediction, shall I ask the eight ball? I haven't seen the eight ball. It's been for a while. Oh, it's been on my desk. I haven't used it.
Go on then, let's do it.
Okay, check it. Will Wolves beat Fulham on Saturday? Badger Gate Ball. Oh, you may rely on it.
Ooh.
Ooh, don't mind that from the eight ball. Don't mind that from the eight ball. Difficult one, but I'm going to say it's Wolverhampton Wanderers 1. It's Fulham 1.
Ooh.
Score draw.
Hedge your bets, lad.
I'm going to hedge my bets. I'm going to stick on that fence.
And is the competition based on my prediction today?
It is on your prediction, sir.
Okay. Wolves bounce back.
Oh, come on, baby.
Wolves 2.
2.
Fulham 1.
Ah, you love to see it, Liam Keane.
Let's have it.
Let's have it, lad. Sorry, just before I go, have you seen the bloody on my Twitter timeline? Have you seen this as well? In Egypt, that mummy that's just been discovered, fully preserved.
What are you talking about?
It's like have you seen the pictures on your Twitter?
No, this is going to be some sort of joke, I can tell.
No, I'm not, mate, I'm not joking. Like, there's a mummy that's been fully preserved in perfect condition. And I guess how it's been fully preserved, if the ancient Aztecs have poured chocolate and hazelnuts on it to make it fully preserved, they literally just found it. They've called it Pharaoh Roche.
Mate, you are absolutely awful. You are a disgrace. You're an embarrassment.
We'll see you on Saturday. From me, from Keto, have a great
weekend.
You're
better
than that. Take care. Bye-bye.
Horrendous. We are the Wanderers in all gold and black. You better retreat, because we're on the attack. The strength of the wolf is the strength of the pack. We're Wolverhampton, we're on our way back.